You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
What lengths would you go to help someone else's child? Gladys Kalabala writes the weekly Lost and Abandoned column for Uganda's largest newspaper in hopes of reuniting abandoned and lost children with their families. But Gladys doesn't stop there. She regularly travels to remote villages to uncover children's stories and find relatives, and has even started a farm where lost and abandoned children can live safely and thrive. In a new book called Garden of the Lost and Abandoned, the extraordinary story of one ordinary woman and the children she serves, Academy Award-winning documentary filmmaker Jessica Yu tells the fascinating story of Gladys Kalabala and her children. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and it's my pleasure to welcome Jessica Yu back to our show. Hi.
Thanks so much for having me.
The last time you were here was to talk about a film, but now you've started writing books as well.
Yes, this opportunity that came up, it was a rare thing and not something I had expected.
What motivated Gladys to start writing her column?
So Gladys originally was not a writer. She came to journalism late in life, and she made a name for herself by her special interest stories, writing about ordinary people. So one of her editors said, you know, there are kids that get stranded at the police station. Maybe you could start to profile them. And that's what she started to do in her column.
And she writes it in English, not in Bantu, Nilotic, or Central Sudanic, the languages of Uganda?
English is also one of the major languages of Uganda, and her newspaper is an English-language newspaper.
And do you know whether a lot of people read her column?
A lot of people read her column. So I think I want to say that every issue that is bought is read by at least 10 people. So the readership is actually quite large. However, that said, a lot of the kids who are lost and abandoned, they come from places where English is not necessarily spoken.
And how does she learn about them?
So Gladys has a circuit where she goes to different police stations and she interviews kids who have been taken there, who have been lost, or kids who are in trouble. And then now it's gotten to the point where people will call her cell phone or bring kids right to the newsroom for her to meet.
Now, you're saying lost and abandoned. What's the distinction there?
Well, I would say there are thousands of kids in Uganda who are stranded through illness, poverty, neglect, misfortune. It's a variety of situations. A lot of the kids do have a family somewhere, and that's Gladys's priority, to reunite them.
And they're abandoned simply because of poverty?
Well, I think in some situations, a family might not have the means to care for the children. Again, every story is different, and I would say there's a twist in every story, so it's very hard to generalize.
Have you witnessed Gladys interviewing these children?
Oh, yes, yes.
What information does she try to get from them? What's most important for her?
What's most important to Gladys is, do they know the name of their village? Who knows them? Who are the relatives that might be looking for them that they might be able to connect to? It's all about that is the first priority. In a lot of cases, though, there might not be a thread to retie.
And young children don't always have reliable memories. Some are just too young. And like all of us, sometimes they lie. So she has to navigate through those issues as well.
Well, this is interesting because I think coming from a filmmaking background, I try to think visually, and I see Gladys doing that as well. She'll look to see, does this child have shoes? Is their face clean? Can they show me the place where they sleep if she goes out in the field to follow a story? So she puts together those clues to see if they mesh up with the story the child is telling.
And then she doesn't just profile the children in her column. She goes to great lengths to find them a home?
She'll look for, yes, if it's a roof, if it's medical care, if it's just a meal, it's whatever need is most pressing.
Let's talk about some of the children you profile in your book. Tell us about Ezra. How old was he when Gladys first met him?
So Ezra was a teenager who left his village. He was 16 at the time, and he had an abnormality. His face was sort of swollen up to twice its size, and so he took the bold step of trying to go out and work and find care for to be able to raise money for the surgery. And of course, you know, he had never been that far away from his village. He just happened to meet Gladys when he went to this TV station looking for help, and she ended up getting involved in his case, and that becomes one of the bigger threads in the book.
Was he able to get the surgery and have his face returned to normal?
It's a very dramatic story because Gladys really goes out for this kid and tries to get him help, and there's a lot of ups and downs, but she does get the surgery for him.
Half of Uganda's population is under 15 years old. That's an extraordinary number. Why is there such a large percentage of the population that's so young?
Well, Uganda, I think in the last census, they have about the fifth highest fertility rate in the world. So it's about six children per woman. And access to contraception is very, very spotty. I would say like about 25% of the women who want it get it. So that is a big part of the equation.
So six kids and poverty, obviously that would lead to some problems like abandonment. What does poverty look like in Uganda? Is it worse than in some of the neighboring countries?
I can't really speak to the neighboring countries so much, but I would say that you know, formal sector employment is very, very low. It's still very much an agricultural economy, and so in a lot of the villages, you'll see just there's a lot of kids running around, and the and education is also extremely limited. Although there's this idea that there's universal early primary education, you'll see classes that'll have 150 kids in them. So I think that's also where opportunity falls off the map for a lot of kids.
It's a former British colony, and it's part of the Commonwealth, I imagine. Does it get any help from Britain?
Well, in 1962, Uganda became independent from Britain, and it seems like right now, though, that there is not... I can't really speak to how much foreign help there is or anything like that, but I would say that it's a place where people end up fending for themselves quite a bit.
And then earlier in the show, we had David Miliband of the International Rescue Committee, and he said that Uganda has large refugee camps from neighboring countries that are troubled. So that has to be a drain on its economy as well.
Yeah.
Now, Gladys is, well, first I should tell people who my guest is, Jessica Yu, YU. Her book is Garden of the Lost and Abandoned, the extraordinary story of one ordinary woman and the children she saves. Gladys's primary goal is to find family members to claim these children and take them back. What happens if she can't?
Well, this is where Gladys goes far beyond the bounds of her job. And again, she will stay connected to some of these kids for years. There's a lot of kids out there who call her mom. So what's remarkable to me is actually how she does so much of this on her own. I mean, she doesn't have the backing of an NGO. She doesn't have money. She doesn't have transportation. But she clearly takes a lot of joy in the effort to try to help these kids.
You devote quite a few chapters to one boy whom you dub the boy with seven names. How does he have seven names? You call him Victor.
Right. So this was a story that unfolded over a long period of time. I followed Gladys for almost 3 years. And so this boy came in with one story. And as you've mentioned before, kids don't always tell the truth. They don't always know the truth. And so every time I visited, there would be some new piece of the puzzle. And I think this is also what draws Gladys to this work. It's very dramatic trying to find out what's actually going on. You know, who's actually in the picture? Where does this kid actually belong? And so over time, it kept going on and on and on until all the layers were stripped away.
What did he say had happened to his parents?
Well, he believed that his father died of cancer, and he originally claimed that an aunt had abandoned him at the market. And so that was the initial story.
And then Gladys found out that he did have a mother who was alive and located.
Yeah, there were it was, you know, a little bit of a an opera going on there with different characters making surprise entrances. But very, very just you realize each one of these kids, there's a knot of story and there's a knot of problems. And so for someone to have the commitment to keep going back, it requires someone like Gladys who's willing to put that in.
His mother had him when she was very young.
Yeah, I think she was pregnant when she was 13.
And then the father was abusive?
That's right, yeah.
So did Victor decided not to go back to live with his mother and siblings?
Yeah, part of that is that Victor really wanted an education. And a lot of these kids, they really feel the absence of school. Some are intimidated by it, but Victor is someone who definitely has plans for himself.
Victor's mother's story and a number of the other stories that you relate raise the challenges that women in particular face in Uganda.
Yes.
And you write, life was tough for the very poor, more so for the very poor women, most of all for very poor young mothers. But the bleak truth was, no matter how difficult their lot, it was up to these girls to build something out of their lives. No one was going to help them.
Right, right. Yeah, it's very tough. One of the issues that has come up before is that in a lot of the rural communities, children belong to the father. So even if the father is absent, even if the father is not supportive, if things go awry, he can take the child
away. That's by law? Or tradition?
Tradition. It's by tradition. So the women, like that mother, Rebecca, who really fight to have a connection with their kids are formidable, but it's very difficult.
We've mentioned boys, but there are a lot of girls in this story as well,
yeah.
And they face other kinds of problems. The possibility of human trafficking.
Yes. There was one, there's a couple of issues that are raised in the book. One is that there's the possibility of kids being kidnapped for human sacrifice. It's not something that happens very, very often, but it's something that Gladys always fears when she hears about a kid going missing. And then there was, you know, there was actually a story about a girl who was kidnapped that is not in the book because it hasn't sort of reached closure yet, but that's a story that I'd like to pursue someday.
There was a story of Rose whose father was in prison. Gladys took her to prison.
Yeah.
How did Rose react to meeting him?
Rose is one of those children. She's very, she's got a very whimsical imagination. And so when she saw other kids being reconnected with their families, she wanted that too. But it's a tough situation because her father was arrested for defilement, meaning that he had raped her when she was very little. So she did not, she still had this fantasy about meeting her father, but when it actually happened, of course, she just behaved very viscerally and couldn't handle meeting him.
Rose and a few other children and women in the book display pretty clear symptoms of trauma.
Yeah.
Did Gladys talk to you about helping these kids heal from their trauma?
I think the thing that Gladys does the most is she maintains that face-to-face connection with these kids. I've been with Gladys where we have driven 6 hours to the middle of nowhere so that she can spend literally 6 minutes with some of her kids, and then we get in the car and we drive 6 hours back. It's really important, I think, and it's hard to overstate the value of that in a place where transportation is so difficult and money is so tight, that to go out and to be present for a child really means a lot. And it also nurtures Gladys as well, because of course she enjoys being able to see them.
One of the stories you highlight is about three children who Gladys profiled and then placed at Young Hearts Orphanage. And they were adopted by an American couple, but that ended up as a rather troubling story.
Yeah, I think Gladys's opinions about adoption are shaped by her... So she was following a case of a young child named Mukisa, who was adopted. And after the adoption went through, his parents showed up. And so it has always been difficult for her to see adoption as the sort of, you know, white knight coming in to save these kids that sometimes I think people assume it is.
If people want to adopt children from Uganda, how do we ensure that we're not aiding a corrupt system?
I think now the systems that they have in place require that interested adoptive parents or parents interested in adopting need to spend 3 years in Uganda. That is a big ask, and so the problem is that sometimes there are loopholes and ways around it that make people less likely to go through the formal process.
Gladys has a farm, which she takes care of the kids who she can't place anywhere else.
Well, okay, so in the book, Gladys decides that she has to find some way to sustain her work because it's she doesn't have money, and so she's always sort of scrambling to make do for her kids. So she decides that she will try farming, and so she takes out a loan to have a 3-acre farm. And she doesn't know anything about farming. She also doesn't have the money for this. So it's a part of the book. It's a very dramatic thread because it's a risk she's taking for herself as much for her kids. But it hasn't quite gotten to the level of her dream, which is to one day maybe have a children's home on this land. But she's very excited by the prospect. And there's so much drama in that story that I did not expect.
How does Gladys cope with learning about the cruelty that some of these children have experienced?
I think Gladys has this incredible buoyancy. I mean, when she's talking to a kid, she fully absorbs what they're telling her. But then she looks for, what is the practical step? How can I help this child? And I think one thing I've really taken from Gladys is that appreciation for the small act, you know, and the accumulation of these small acts. And I think in the U.S. we like our problems to be solvable. You know, we get discouraged when they're big and complex and remote. And when Gladys is on the ground with these kids, I think it's a different equation. You know, the fact that she knows if she takes some action, she can get a little improvement on this front. She can help this kid a little bit. And then sometimes that turns into being involved in a kid's life for years.
Didn't this book grow out of a documentary film you made?
Yes, I was.
How do I see that film?
The film is called Misconception, and I'm sure you can see it on Amazon and Netflix, the places where we can now access documentaries. And Gladys is one story in that film.
And then that film inspired you to actually write a book.
Yes, it was really the experience of meeting Gladys because I realized that after a few days of filming, I did not want to just walk away. I was really struck by, I would say, the mystery of character. I mean, I was really drawn to this issue of how was her resilience forged under the same pressure that crushed so many others. And I just wanted to get closer to whatever that was.
Jessica Yu is a filmmaker known for both her scripted and nonfiction work, which includes the Academy Award-winning short Breathing Lessons. And now she's written a book called Garden of the Lost and Abandoned, the extraordinary story of one ordinary woman and the children she saves. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.